Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Dangbior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, July 6th, 2018. An agreement on security arrangements is reached in Khartoum. And a top UN official says rape and other forms of sexual violence are rampant in South Sudan's conflict because of impunity.
The most recent attacks in Unity between April and May also exemplify the scope and character of sexual violence in the South Sudan conflict.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The warring sides in South Sudan have reached a deal on security arrangements in talks in Khartoum. The government and rebel groups are expected to sign the deal today. The talks are intended to bring a peace deal between forces supporting President Salva Kiir and those backing opposition leader Riek Machar. The agreement on security was reached last night. It is expected to cover four major issues: demilitarized areas, a time frame within which to unify and reorganize the various forces into a national army, setting up a joint security committee, and deciding on cantonment areas. Talks began last month when the two leaders met for the first time in 2 years in Addis Ababa. The two sides declared a ceasefire last week. However, there are unconfirmed reports of ceasefire violations, with both sides accusing the other of breaking the peace. The war in South Sudan has displaced millions and has resulted in mass food insecurity across the country. A top United Nations official visiting South Sudan says rape and other forms of sexual violence are rampant in the South Sudanese conflict because of impunity. The UN expert on sexual violence in conflict says her team will work with President Salva Kiir's administration to prevent sexual violence in conflict and give victims access to justice, medical, and psychosocial support. Nabil Biagio reports for VOA from Juba.
The Undersecretary General and UN Special Representative on Sexual Violence in Conflict, Pramila Patton, says she came to South Sudan to help implement a memorandum of understanding to prevent sexual violence in conflict.
The basis for my visit is the joint communique which the President Salva Kiir signed with the United Nations and my office in October 2014 in order to address and prevent conflict-related sexual violence. I felt it important to come and to share with the government of South Sudan my own strategic vision for the mandate and to expedite the implementation of the joint communique.
Patton says punishing perpetrators of rape and other forms of sexual violence is key to preventing sexual crimes.
For the Secretary General, prevention is not a priority. It is the priority. And my own strategic vision for this mandate is fully aligned with his vision in terms of the necessity to reverse the culture of impunity into a culture of prevention and deterrence through justice and accountability.
The UN expert visited internally displaced persons in Malakal and Juba who have been subjected to sexual violence. She says sexual violence is still rampant in the South Sudanese conflict, with women being targeted based on their ethnicity.
The most recent attacks in Unity between April and May also exemplify the scope and character of sexual violence in the South Sudan conflict, characterized by the abduction, by the rapes or gang rapes of women and girls, rapes and gang rapes of pregnant women, lactating mothers and children as young as 4 years old.
Patton says sexual violence survivors told her that they want justice, access to medical and psychosocial care, as well as livelihood support. She says the United Nations and the government of South Sudan must scale up their support for victims.
Sexual and gender-based violence services are life-saving, and I'm very disturbed by the qualitative and quantitative gaps in terms of service provision, sometimes due to security. But I think this is very disturbing, and there is a need to really scale up service provision.
Patton says government officials she met in Malakal and Juba, including the minister in the office of President Kiir, all acknowledged the rampant sexual violence in South Sudan and said they are committed to ending it.
As a follow-up to my one-week visit, I'm sending this technical mission that will come and work concretely with SPLA. And I have one Swedish police expert who will be working with the South Sudan National Police Force. And I have another expert who will be working with SPLA.
Patton says another expert will be overseeing the overall implementation of the joint communique that President Kiir signed with the UN. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
This week, we heard a civil society activist speak out against the amendment introduced in Parliament to extend the terms in office of President Salva Kiir and other elected officials by 3 more years. But a South Sudan expert says it's not such a bad idea given the current political situation in South Sudan. Matthew LaReach, assistant professor of global studies at Ohio University, points out that the president's terms in office and those of members of Parliament expire next month.
The government's in a position where their mandate expires. I mean, they've been in that position before, and they pushed a similar type of amendment through the assembly, which they largely control. But they are in that difficult situation. You know, they do need to maintain legitimacy, and this is an important part of that. An important part of their argument to a lot of people in South Sudan is that they are the elected government, regardless of what, you know, other people comment on. This is part of their claim to legitimacy, and it's important. So they're going to try, definitely going to try and do something.
Do you think it's right, though, that it be extended for 3 entire years? Some in the opposition that we heard from have said that they're trying to pressure Machar to make more compromises at the table right now by doing that.
Well, I mean, you know, whether it's 3 years or two or one or... You know, I mean, the I think President Kiir has in the past, you know, made the threat, but he's definitely made the claim that they were willing to go to an election immediately. So the opposition has said, you know, that that's not viable, that they wouldn't take part. So, you know, they're going to have to find some sort of accommodation there. If they're going to create a transitional government out of this most recent peace agreement, you know, one presumes that then sort of takes authority, and then they create however long their transitional period is going to be. But we've seen a number of transitional periods already. So, the deal is so thin on details in terms of, you know, what the transitional period leads to and what's supposed to happen during that period. You know, whether it's, you know, making a comment as to whether or not 2 or 3 years is viable or risky, really comes down to those specifics, and it's hard to know. I mean, they haven't given any specifics. They said, you know, the UGAD teams are going to continue to have their talks, and that's going to be borne out in the new, whatever the resolved bridging proposal comes up with.
What if this, you know, the end game here with the talks just falls flat and they don't really reach a final deal? They do have what they've already agreed to, which you've discussed here with us. What do you think happens next with the government, that this amendment goes through and then they just kind of keep plodding along the way things are now?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the, I mean, you know, I mean, I think this is less a change than people might think. I mean, this is a, you know, there's a very sort of consistent history of operating this way, and so I think if the scenario you present, you know, occurs, then I would expect the government to have the National Assembly extend the president's term and continue to move along forward. I mean, I think, you know, what has sometimes been what's been overlooked is that the government is sitting in a strong position on, you know, in terms of the security situation, they are in control of it in terms of sort of, you know, military battle type situation. There's a lot of insecurity in terms of criminality, intercommunal violence, and a lot of these sorts of things that are occurring and that we see continuing. But I think a lot of members of the government are comfortable in their position and feel as though they have a strong position. So I think your scenario is probably quite likely.
That's Matthew LaReach, director of the Global Leadership Center and assistant professor of global studies at Ohio University. He was speaking with my colleague Carol Van Dam from Athens, Ohio. A South Sudanese mother in Australia is appealing to community members in Melbourne to unite for the sake of young South Sudanese children who face many challenges in Australia. Alwel Mayat Kwal is a mother of four and a community leader in Victoria State. She says the future of some young South Sudanese in Australia is bleak. Mayat tells VOA's John Tanza that unless South Sudanese come together, it will be difficult for some parents who are not educated to guide their children who have dropped out of school or university and are ending up in prisons.
South Sudanese in Victoria, in Australia, as general, we are not united.
Why are you not united?
People don't listen to each other. People now talk in South Sudan. South Sudan is not an issue, but South Sudan makes things worse. Because now we have a lot of children in jail, thousands of our children in jail, and we don't know why they're in jail. Because community are not united in Australia. If we are united, especially in Victoria, because we big member here, a big number in Victoria, we can raise our voice as a community. We can fight the justice.
What is the injustice about? Could you explain one case? Because injustice is a big word to use.
Exactly. I witnessed a lot of incident with police and our youth, even the young, 13, even age of 14. I found one day, I remember last year, July last year, I found number of boys, they was knocked out on the road, and then the police beat them up. And then I was coming from Dandenong Warding City, and then I made a U-turn and I went to where those kids were knocked out on the floor. I asked the police, I said, oh, what happened? They said, there's a robbery has occurred in Dandenong Plaza. I said, are they all involved in that robbery? They said, not all of them. I said, then why you arrested all of them if you know that not all of them? Does that mean if there's any robbery has occurred somewhere, you have to arrest all the children on the road? He said, no, you are accusing us, we're racist. I said, no, I'm not accusing you guys, you're racist, but what I know, the bottle shop has cameras. So whoever came and steal something, he has to pay for it. It's not everybody on the road. And when I saw the kids, I was talking to them, the one who really already been awake, I asked them from where they are, they are Nuer, they are Dinka, they were South Sudanese. When I came to the Dinka and Nuer and Equatoria, I just don't see the reason. I just see them, they are not really educated enough. Even though they are educated, we have a number of people they educate, there is no jobs in Australia for them. I found a lot of people, like I know one person, he has a double master. He has a double master and he's working. He got $20 an hour, $23 an hour. He's working as a disability company. So I just see there's a lot of things wrong here. We as a community, if we are united, we can create even businesses. We can employ our kids, our children who are having no job in Australia, and we can pay even more taxes. But there's a lot of things wrong here in Australia. We are not united. This is what has affected us.
What do you want the community to do for you to be united?
Community, they have to come together. Actually, South Sudanese in Victoria or all Australia, they don't have problem to each other. People just talking about what happening there back in South Sudan. If we talk about South Sudan, how about us here in Australia? We have a lot of our children now, they're in jail. We have a lot of them, even they got killed and no justice being taken. So this one is a community. And I know Australia is a very beautiful country and I really love and I really do appreciate that we are here in Australia. But why our children, they are the one we here for them, they don't have a great future like like others community has. And because our community, they are not united, we didn't put our children first. If we, the day we put our families first, the community will come together and they will finalize that we were doing wrong things and we need to correct it.
As a parent, you told me you have kids. What are you doing to help your kids not get into these problems?
Yeah, I have four boys. I have my first one, he's 23 now, and the second one is 19, and the third one is 17. He's in year 12 this year. There is nothing I can say I would not do this. But my role as a mother at home, I have to always talk to them. Any incident I see it outside, I have to come home and I share the story with them. And they always share also their story with me because I saw many things and they've also been witness a lot of things. And also they know exactly now what is right and what is wrong.
That's Alul Mayat Kwal, a South Sudanese community leader in Victoria State. She was speaking to my colleague John Tanza in Melbourne, Australia, earlier this week. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, pressure from constituents has led Ugandan legislators to open up talks about the new tax on social media and mobile money transfers. Stay tuned.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how has technology impacted your life?
When I want information, I just pick my phone. I just go to Google, and all the information that I want, I get it just right where I stand.
It made me to be so social to people, like on Facebook. I've known so many people, knowing how they are going on in life, and also on WhatsApp, chatting with my friends.
It's educative to me as well, because if I need to know something about history, something about a disease, something about some medicine, I just go and read about it online.
When I need information, I don't necessarily have to go to the library. All I need to do is just pick up my tablet and I Google whatever I want to know about whilst in the comfort of my home.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The Ugandan army has confirmed an attack on a Navy patrol boat on Lake Edward, killing one soldier and injuring another. Earlier reports indicate that the Ugandan boat was hit by the Democratic Republic of Congo Navy patrol. But the Ugandan army spokesman says an investigation is still ongoing. Catherine Nambi files this report from Kampala.
The attack took place yesterday on Lake Edward along the border of the two countries near the Congolese village of Chavinyonge. Brigadier Richard Kalemire is the Uganda Army spokesperson.
It is confirmed that around 9 a.m. yesterday, Thursday, one boat on routine patrol was attacked by unknown gunmen on Lake Edward using a grenade. One UPDF soldier was killed and another got injured.
The DRC forces are tasked with preventing militia fighters and local rebels and others from neighboring Uganda and Rwanda from operating in the area. According to media reports, the Congolese Navy allegedly attacked the Ugandan army boat after it crossed over to the DRC side. Although Kalemire could not refute the reports, he said investigations into the incident are still ongoing.
Patrols have now been stepped up as investigations to identify the perpetrators continue. The investigations will establish and find out what was behind this attack, who was involved, and indeed the reasons, so that it can help us to put in place active measures to deter such attacks in future.
This comes on the heels of heightened clashes between the Ugandan and DRC forces over waters of Lake Edward. The clashes are said to have intensified at the beginning of this month. The fishermen in the two countries have on several occasions accused each other of encroaching on the other's territory. On Wednesday, a Ugandan patrol boat arrested 18 Congolese fishermen for allegedly casting their fishnets on the Ugandan side of the lake. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
A A section of parliament in Uganda is on a mission to solicit the 150 signatures required from other members of parliament so they can debate and remove the newly introduced taxes on social media and mobile money transfer tax. The MPs say their constituents have complained of losing jobs and are not able to pay the required tax. From Kampala, Uganda, reporter Mugume Davis Wakaringe files this report.
We are opposing the 1% they imposed on our customers. We are no longer working. We have closed our businesses since Monday. We have not been receiving customers. Any customer who comes to deposit or to withdraw, he normally says, "This is my last time to withdraw money from here. This is my last time to use mobile money."
We have been paying the tax indirectly, and the tax which they have imposed, which is 1%, is much. Customers have disappeared. We have lost business, and customers are not willing to come back to transact with us through mobile money.
Those were the voices of mobile money agents speaking in Kampala this Thursday as they marched the parliament, where they hope to meet Speaker of the Parliament, Rebecca Kadaga. The mobile money agents say, as a result of the new mobile money tax, most of them have become jobless as their clients do not want to conduct further business via mobile money. Parliamentarian Ariko Herbert Edmund Okwaro says the new taxes will affect both local and international investors in the country.
We have totally squeezed them out of business, out of their livelihood, and out of communication. You can't wish to go into a country where people are gagged, because once you are not able to exercise the freedom of communication, the access to all social media as well as other communication mechanisms that are facilitated through social media, then you are actually trying to lock your people from what is going on around them and what is going on in the countryside.
Member of Parliament Henry Morris Chibalia says they want the MPs to reconvene and debate again the issue of social media and mobile money tax. He says many citizens who have talked to him say they are not happy about the new taxes. He says parliamentarians ought to have consulted voters about the new taxes before introducing them.
And before the law was passed, nobody came down there to consult your people. Nobody took research to go to the mobile people to ask. Nobody took a study to know how many people borrow wewole, the one we call wewole. When somebody goes to the extent of wewole, it means that person is failing to have airtime to run that day. But Kayewole, the following day or the other day, when he gets something, he will pay back. But somebody is on Wewole, but we are putting a tax again.
Another member of parliament, Robert Chagulanyi Ssentamu, popularly known by his music stage name Bobby Wine, agrees. He says he did not approve the tax bill in the first place.
I personally was in that house and I debated against it. So we are not taking back any word we said. We are only saying more that we could not have said on the floor of parliament. But our position was that we were against it. Our position is still that we are against it.
These members will have to get at least 150 signatures for the House to be recalled. It remains to be seen if they will get the required number of signatures or if they will be able to convince their honorable colleagues to remove the new taxes that have brought public outcry. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakaringe in Kampala, Uganda.
As the World Cup nears its climax, one of the players being cheered on in Africa is French striker Kylian Mbappe. Mbappe's mother is from Algeria and his father is from Cameroon. Cameroon failed to qualify for this year's World Cup, but many Cameroonians feel they are represented by Mbappe. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Douala, Cameroon.
Music is blasting from loudspeakers at a popular bar in Makepe, a neighborhood in Cameroon's economic capital, Douala. Until last week, the bar was called Terminus. But when France beat Argentina 4-3 at the World Cup in Russia, the bar was rebaptized Mbappe in honor of the French striker Kylian Mbappe, who scored 2 spectacular goals in the game. Bar manager Marcel Lenny says he wishes Cameroon's national team had a player like Mbappe.
France are performing very well.
And if you see them qualifying, it's because of Kylian Mbappe. I wish our football federation could have called him to play for us in the national team. When you look at our own national team, you see there is something missing of which Mbappe has.
Mbappe has a Cameroonian father who is his agent and an Algerian mother. He is one of 15 players on the French squad who were either born in Africa or can trace their roots back to the continent, part of which France ruled at one time as a colonial power. Mbappe became a professional player in Monaco at the age of 16, just 3 years ago. He has never lived nor played in Cameroon, but his performances attracted the attention of the Cameroon Football Federation and he was contacted to play for the national team, nicknamed the Indomitable Lions. But French coach Didier Deschamps already had keen eyes for him. Soccer analyst and former Cameroon Premier League player Gabriel Tilla says it is a great loss that Cameroon failed to get Mbappe to play for his father's homeland.
Mbappe est un joueur vraiment talentueux. Il fallait des gens comme ça pour jouer dans l'équipe camerounaise.
He says they needed Mbappe to bring Cameroon's football back to glory, but unfortunately, their local football federation neglected him. He says it is a shame that Cameroon abandoned football star Mbappe to France at a time when Central African States football has taken a downward turn due to a lack of talented players. Cameroon's national team is the African champion, but the squad was eliminated from the race to the 2018 World Cup after a 1-1 tie last year with Nigeria. Local football fans say if they had players like Kylian Mbappe, they would have performed better. Nonetheless, thousands of Cameroonian World Cup fans will be glued to their TV sets to cheer on Mbappe, who they see as a fellow countryman, playing for a nation with deep ties to Cameroon. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Douala, Cameroon.
And that's our show for this Friday. We leave you with the song Donobi by Kwabena Kwabena.
My way out of Conyo, oh, yeah. Into some emu, yeah. No, that is a shamani, Matia, Mammy, show, yeah. So be the other needy. You got in my way out of Conyo, oh, yeah. Into some emu, yeah. No, that is a shamani. Shemanim, mamin, jemukie, onyamena baza boye nina, wanem benu benu, manu jemana meunuda, mezanyu wovu wovu, medaji, miriati, miyezi, ningina la shawetsa, yetu wade, shana yimambo, mama kengina atumasi, mama tamfu nyambo.
We We've been listening to Kwabena Kwabena with the song Donobi. I'm Ayen Deng Bure in Washington. Thanks for being here. Let us know how you like the show. You can find us on the web at southsudan@voanews.com or reach us on Facebook. Our title is South Sudan in Focus. We hope you can join us back here again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.